taking their place in a long, true line of everyday Americans.
Helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, this is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution, and we teach the rising generation to be free. You know, with all of this COVID stuff, I've told you before, I am not a doctor, and I've never played one on TV, but I have the pleasure of having an excellent doctor joining me today to explain some of what's been going on. Dr. McCullough is an internist, a cardiologist, an epidemiologist managing the cardiovascular complications of both the viral infection and the injuries developing after the COVID-19 vaccines in Dallas, Texas. He obviously knows a lot more about the vaccines, but I really, and I've been following him. But Dr. McCullough, first of all, thank you for being here. I'm very interested in the process of the approval of the vaccines.
Well, the vaccines have come along under the regulatory framework of the what's called the Emergency Use Authorization, or EUA. I'll use that abbreviation. They weren't the first product that had an EUA in the pandemic. The very first product was actually hydroxychloroquine. And hydroxychloroquine is an oral drug that we've been using throughout the pandemic. It was already available and on the market. So the very first EUA application in COVID-19 was inappropriate. So to actually try to use an emergency use authorization on an existing product was an inappropriate use of that regulatory pathway. There had been about a dozen EUA products in the past that were temporarily made available, like the anthrax vaccine to the military, and then quickly withdrawn. The EUA has not produced any durable entry of any commercialized product. I think people ought to know that. It's been around for several years. The EUA says that for that indication, there must not be alternatives in the marketplace. So the first EUA product was hydroxychloroquine, inappropriately applied. The second one was remdesivir, an intravenous product used in the hospital, which turns out to cause more deaths than placebo, causes heart injury or liver injury and kidney injury. And the World Health Organization says, don't use remdesivir. They had an entire panel in 2020 that said, stop using it. And to this day, remdesivir is still used in U.S. hospitals under the EUA mechanism, against the data and against the WHO. So the EUA is not doing too good so far with hydroxychloroquine and with remdesivir. Then came the vaccines. What came next was actually bamlanivimab. That was a monoclonal antibody by Lilly that got EUA. It had a short lifespan on the market because the virus mutated, and quickly bamlanivimab didn't capture the virus as a therapy. So then came the vaccine. So the vaccines were the fourth and fifth entry in under EUA. First was Pfizer, and it was approved under the clinical trials and got a single indication that the EUA said that Pfizer could reduce the risk of actually getting COVID-19 in the community, like getting a cold, the upper respiratory tract. The EUA never has granted Pfizer a claim that it reduces hospitalizations or death. That's very important. In fact, the Pfizer clinical trials that all came in finally fully published in September of 2021, New England Journal of Medicine, more deaths with Pfizer than placebo. It's very important. Hmm. So when people claim the vaccines reduce hospitalization and death, the FDA doesn't agree, and they've never had an EUA claim. Now, Pfizer came in under that claim because it's to prevent the illness. Remember, I told you that hydroxychloroquine was an EUA to treat the illness, remdesivir to treat the illness, bamlanivimab to treat the illness. So the vaccines come under a separate indication to prevent the illness. Many people, I think, mistakenly have said, the reason why treatment was suppressed is so the vaccines could come in. I think that's wrong because they're two separate indications. And in fact, treatment did precede the vaccines. Now, that was in November of 2021. Pfizer basically became commercially available in December of 2020. And then within 90 days, we now know Pfizer was made aware of, actually reported to them, 1,223 deaths. That's the shocker. That was released in the court-ordered documents that Pfizer had that was released to the public. And that's just become known in the last 2 weeks. So shockingly, Pfizer knew about a record number of deaths occurring shortly after their vaccine. Doctors and nurses, hospitals were reporting this. Pfizer didn't make this publicly available, didn't change a consent form, and very importantly, didn't pull the product off the market. Typically, 50 unexplained deaths, products are pulled off the market. So it's not looking too good for EUA, certainly not looking good for Pfizer.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. Every time I hear you talk, I learn something new about this mess. And it's funny, you know, it's the whole idea of an emergency use authorization is there has to be no other choice. In other words, before we start experimenting on people with drugs that have not been completely tested, I want to be as fair as possible. There has to be no other choice. And we had other choices, didn't we?
Well, remember that, again, it's according to indication, we had choices for treatment that were also EUA. So they were choices for treatment, but we didn't have a choice for prevention that was commercially available. Now, the prevention prophylactic protocols were being studied, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, but they were medicinal prophylactics. They weren't in the category of vaccines. So I think they had a free entry under EUA. But you brought up another important point that I failed to mention, is that any product under emergency use authorization is still under clinical investigation. And to this day, because none of the vaccines are FDA approved, they're all under EUA, that the consent form still says, every American that's taken a vaccine, the consent form says, this is investigational or it's research, depends what state you're in, and that you're participating in research. And you can only participate in research under your own voluntary permission. You cannot receive any pressure, coercion, or threat of reprisal for either participating or not participating in research. That's called the Nuremberg Code. And that's actually protected under the Office of Human Research Protections in Washington. No one should feel any pressure to receive the vaccines.
And you said that's actually in the consent form people sign when they take the shot?
Yeah, the consent form uses the word either investigational or research in every consent form because it's under the emergency use authorized. Now, if it's fully approved, it will say, listen, this is a fully approved drug. Here's the package insert. There is no package insert for the products because they're not FDA approved.
Gotcha. So it really is this kind of, you know, you mentioned the Nuremberg Code The very first, I mean, there are 10 items in the code. The very first one is this whole idea of informed consent. You have to be informed, and the consent, like you said, cannot be coerced. But we've spent months dealing with nothing but coercion for these shots. And I even have a hard time in my discussions even referring to them as a vaccine, because as I understand it, they don't meet the legal definition of a vaccine. And in fact, the CDC ended up changing their terminology for a vaccine in order to make these mRNA drugs fit. Are these truly vaccines, or are they the gene therapy I've heard people refer to them as?
The FDA considers them gene therapy. So they're under that category by the FDA because they're genetic. They actually bring in the genetic code into the human body, a foreign genetic code. The messenger RNA products have nucleoside analog caps, synthetic caps on them at 3' and 5'. And we now know in a paper from Stanford published in Cell by Holtkin and colleagues that the messenger RNA is not broken down. It's found in lymph nodes 2 months later. So when someone takes shot one, by the time they take shot two, shot one is still in the body. And we don't know what it's doing there. We have the very first paper from Sweden, Alden and colleagues, that suggests it may be reverse transcribed. It actually, the RNA actually may install the permanent DNA code in the human nucleus, as shown in a cell line of hepatocytes or liver cells. They've discovered what reverse transcriptase does. It's called line one. It's a human reverse transcriptase. This is really alarming. The CDC on its website says this does not alter human DNA. And now we have a paper in the last month or so from a lab in Malmo, Sweden, suggesting just the opposite, that these actually change DNA. So everything we've learned about these vaccines is really alarming. They last in the body far too long. They may permanently install into the human nucleus. They clearly produce the dangerous spike protein, which is lethal in so many people. It's a lethal protein that's on the surface of the virus. That's what the genetic code is for. And the genetic code is installed wherever the lipid nanoparticles take it. Lipid nanoparticles go into the brain, the adrenal glands, the heart, the reproductive organs. They install the genetic code for the dangerous spike protein, and then the dangerous spike protein is produced. And a recent paper put out by an Italian investigator, Dr. Panagis Polycritis, that was just published, suggests, and he's very clear on this, I interviewed him for the McCullough Report, that in each and every cell that messenger RNA is taken up and the spike protein is produced, that cell is destroyed. So you can imagine ovarian cells, brain cells, heart muscle cells, liver cells. I mean, this is really, really disturbing news. Everything we're learning about the vaccines is incredibly worrisome. And I'm just quoting the peer-reviewed literature. I'm not giving you my individual opinions. I'm giving you the science.
So would it be wrong to say that we now, that America now has more than 200 million GMO citizens, genetically modified organisms as citizens?
About two-thirds of Americans have taken one of these vaccines. And, you know, we have the GINA laws, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act. They could be genetically altered. Now, we're going to need a lot more supportive studies. In the Lund paper, they didn't show the entire code in the chromatin or the nuclear DNA. That they showed what's called a reporter region, what's called the amplicon, about 444 base pairs out of about 4,000. But it's right in the middle of the code. And I've talked to a lot of experts. I said, what's the chances that the middle of the code ends up, of the messenger RNA, ends up in the human nucleus without the whole thing? They said, no, that's the whole idea. The reason why they chose the middle is that it almost certainly means the entire spike protein code is in fact installed in human DNA. And this is the worst type of revelation we could possibly have. I know a lot of people took the vaccines out of, you know, being patriotic, or they thought it was good for their health. But now we've learned no one feels good after these vaccines. The rates of deaths and side effects are astronomical. And to make matters worse, now we realize the vaccines don't work. They don't stop COVID-19. So people are getting it multiple times despite taking the vaccine. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki just announced she's got COVID for the second time, fully vaccine boosted. She had a case in the fall, probably Delta, now's got a case now, Omicron. Former President Obama has got COVID despite being fully vaxxed and boosted. It should become obvious to people. Colin Powell, former Secretary of State, fully vaxxed and boosted, died with COVID. He also had multiple myeloma. I mean, how many more examples do we need? Right now, with the Omicron outbreak, the majority of people who got COVID were fully vaccinated in every study published so far. It should be clear that the vaccines have failed, and people should understand that.
Wow. Now, the reason, again, I've been following some of your work, partially because I found you because we're both on America Out Loud. But I heard you in an interview, and you were describing that part of the EUA process, you have, you know, when you're looking for approval from the FDA, there's a sponsor that looking for approval for the drug or the product, if we want to be specific. And then you have the FDA as a testing entity. But you were, if I remember correctly, you're saying the FDA is both the sponsor and the tester of record?
So the unique thing here is the agencies are out of role. So the normal role is the FDA doesn't promote any drugs. The FDA is a drug watchdog and advertising regulation company. A safety company. That's what it is. It's basically an agency that does this. A company wants to make an advertising claim, and the FDA says, well, you can make that claim or you can't. Most of the label of a drug is actually the advertising claims, which become irrelevant as we use drugs for different reasons. So, but it's a big deal for drug marketing. The one thing that quote label is that's important, it's a compendium of safety. And so I've been in discussions with the FDA, and we agree drugs should be used off-label because the advertising claims of a company are irrelevant to how we use a drug. Even when it's initially introduced, we use the drug any way we want to. Mm-hmm. But the safety is what we agree on. The label is important for safety, disclosure of safety. But the FDA is an unbiased safety watchdog agency and a drug regulatory advertising claim agency only. The CDC is an outbreak investigation unit. It's a top line U.S. government unit that goes in and investigates unusual diseases, and they provide data. They analyze data for us. That's what the CDC does. They serve us. They're kind of a servant organization to doctors. The National Institutes of Health is a government research organization. You know, we apply for grants and they grant the money. That's what the NIH does. None of those organizations treat patients. None of those organizations provide guidance for treating patients. And none of those organizations actually sponsor major drug programs or vaccine programs. They don't. So what is out of line here is the fact that the CDC and the FDA are the named sponsors of the U.S. vaccine program, meaning they've been told, get a needle in every arm. They've been told this. They're out of role. So the FDA in that role has turned a blind eye to safety. I've already told you that Pfizer had 1,223 deaths in the first 90 days. The deaths were on the books. The FDA knew about this. In fact, when lead attorney Aaron Seary pressed for release of the Pfizer data, it was the FDA and their attorney that said, no, we don't want to release this for 55 years. The FDA, not Pfizer, the FDA. The FDA wanted to basically hide these deaths. Well, the deaths have come out now, and the FDA has offered no opinion. There's been no analysis. In fact, Albert Bourla, the Pfizer CEO, he was on national TV last week advising on a fourth booster, and he didn't even mention the deaths. You know, then the press didn't even ask him. So it's a failure of the press. And certainly the CEO of a vaccine company, when deaths and large numbers of deaths have occurred with his product, that should be his first press briefing, is why did the people die and what are they going to do about it? Instead, there's basically just an oblivion to these deaths. I think it's largely because the FDA is out of role. It's clear that Pfizer is not behaving responsibly. You know, the responsible action for a drug company is pull the drug off the market. It's not safe.
You know, and what you're describing to me sounds like, I mean, it's a tremendous conflict of interest. And if this were the Security and Exchange Commission, we'd be talking about insider trading. You're telling me that the agency that's supposed to be watching out for safety and advertising labeling is one of the ones promoting these treatments. The agency that's supposed to be collecting data and has once again had to go back and revise the data they've collected, is also promoting this. Where are the people that are actually watching out to see what's going on? If both the FDA and the CDC have a vested interest in the promotion of a product, where is the other side saying, wait a second, we need to, our job is to be the watchdog. Our job is to oversee and protect the American people. Where is it?
You hit the point, Paul. There is no protective mechanism. Normally, there's a sponsor. It could be a drug company. It could be a society. And then there's an independent data safety monitoring board. And the data safety monitoring board, I do a lot of this work in my academic life. I've chaired over 24 of these. It's usually a panel of experts in different disciplines that are reviewing the data very frequently, typically about once a month in a big program like this. And if they saw signals of harm, they would immediately take action. There may be certain allergic reactions. Maybe there's certain lots of the vaccine that are going bad. There's manufacturing problems, allergic problems. I've been involved in DSMBs where we shut the product down. We say, listen, there's something wrong. We got to stop it here. We can't have more people die. Here in the U.S. program, no data safety monitoring board, no clinical event committee, no human ethics board committee or approval. And this is not what happened in the randomized trials. The randomized trials done in the fall of 2020, they had all these mechanisms in place. In fact, Pfizer, Moderna, J&J got over the finish line because they had data safety monitoring boards. Now in the big public program, there's no safety mechanisms. There are no safeguards for Americans. When Americans take the vaccine, they need to know no one's overseeing this. No one is showing any concern over safety, not Pfizer, not the FDA, not Moderna, not J&J. And even to make matters worse, these entities are indemnified, meaning if there's something happens, there's nothing anybody can do. So they sign a consent form saying they're in research or it's investigational. They're signing a consent form saying that they're doing this willingly, that this is purely elective. And then if something bad happens, they're out of luck.
Yeah, it's funny. I'd love to see a savvy lawyer challenge the indemnification of the vaccine manufacturers, because that violates the First Amendment. You have a right to petition your government for redress of grievance. The federal government, Congress, cannot pass a law that says, "Oh, you can't do that here." But I'm not holding my breath. But it really, the number of times we people are talking and they think people in government are there to protect you. They don't have a profit motive. They don't have these icky corporate ideas. They're there to protect us. And what you're telling me is, at least in this example, it has flat out failed because the people who are supposed to be watching the hen house are now the foxes because they have that vested interest. It truly is scary for me, not because I've taken the vaccine. I have family members who have taken the vaccine. Thankfully, everybody's okay. I've had friends that have taken the vaccine. Thankfully, everybody's okay. The amount of coercion I have seen and the amount of coercion actually my family has gone through. My wife has MS. Her neurologist refused to see her if she did not take one of these experimental drugs. Needless to say, we got a new neurologist, PDQ.
Yeah, the behavior of the doctors is reprehensible. I think the doctors are basically using the patients as human shields. It's not like suddenly the doctor had a great concern over COVID. That same doctor probably wasn't going to treat your wife if she developed COVID last year anyway. So it really wasn't about her. It was about him and using her as a human shield. We see this going on now. It's reprehensible. Poor children taking a vaccine and the schools want the children to take a vaccine to basically use them as a human shield for the teachers. You know, there's a belief system among the vaccine stakeholders that the vaccines really don't work unless everybody takes them. Every single person takes them and takes them over and over again. One time is not going to be enough. It's going to be a shot every 6 months indefinitely. And you can see how that's not feasible. People don't want this. A third of Americans haven't even taken the vaccine. And about a third of those who took the vaccine regret it. They're not going to take any more. People in my family took the vaccine. I've got some elderly, high-risk family members. They took it. And like you, no complications. But boy, I've seen people in my practice and they're coming in. There's about 1.1 million people now in the U.S. CDC VAERS database injured by the vaccines. Thousands have died. And it is sad. You mentioned challenging the indemnification. You know, one approach, I'm not a lawyer and can't offer a legal analysis, but one approach would be the observation that Pfizer has defrauded the government. That they've been fraudulent with respect to their clinical trials and the data, and they didn't come forward and promptly bring forward a very large safety concern on death. And so if they've defrauded the government in the pre-purchase of these products as being safe and effective, then the indemnity shield may come down. But we're going to need some attorneys to come out. You know, we've got millions of attorneys in the United States. Where are the courageous attorneys coming out? We haven't seen them in the hundreds or thousands, that's for sure. So the legal community being absent from the national scene on what's going on with product liability and product dangers and injuries, consequences is really, in my view, a shortcoming. I'm very disappointed in our legal community.
Yeah, I've been disappointed in the legal community and parts of our medical community, certainly our political community. I have to admit, my GP, my wife and I, our GP, has been wonderful since day one of this COVID scare, been rational, been reasonable, been looking at the peer-reviewed studies, and I'm very happy. It's caveat emptor, right? We are consumers of the medical profession. We don't treat them as infallible. We need to be aware of how they're treating these situations and how they treat us. And to put our trust in a government regulatory agency like appears so many Americans have, it's just one more example of why they're just human. They're human beings. They have all the faults and foibles of all of us. And I agree. I'm afraid that we haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg of what is going to happen with, since we now have, again, over 200 million genetically modified people in this country, what is the outcome of that going to be over the 1, 2, 3, 5 generations? We have no idea. I can't say that I'm surprised. I'm really disappointed that more American people don't realize that. No, the government really isn't out there to protect you, especially when it comes to COVID and these so-called vaccines.
Well, I can tell you, Dr. Rubin, who's the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, you know, I'm a former editor of two major journals, so he's kind of in my circles, a bit junior to me. But Dr. Rubin said it at one of the vaccine meetings for children. He said, we'll never know if this is safe unless we just start doing it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, parents have to understand that this is a giant experiment. And with children, COVID, especially with Omicron, is like a case of the sniffles. It's going to be indistinguishable from any other common cold that a child will have. And now that the CDC in the last few days has readjusted the COVID death numbers in pediatrics by 40% down, that means that actually with the vaccines, more children have died with the vaccines than have actually died with COVID, the illness. I mean, this is really upside down. No child in the United States should be taking the COVID-19 vaccine to become healthier. Ron DeSantis in Florida and Joe Lodapo, who's a surgeon general now, have basically said, listen, Florida's not supporting widespread childhood vaccination. I mean, there may be a case or two where someone has a particularly unique situation, but general childhood vaccination for COVID-19 is out in Florida, not supported.
Yeah. Listen, Dr. McCloud, I want to thank you so much for your time. I've got a couple minutes left. Is there anything you want to tell my audience, or especially where can they find out more about you and the wonderful work you've been doing to inform the American public?
Well, like you, you can follow me on America Out Loud Talk Radio, the McCullough Report. I issue a report to the nation every week, and I have a music segment. I've got the science segment and update, you know, key things in the media, links to all the evidence. As you can tell by this interview today, I'm very evidence-based. I didn't give any opinions. I just gave you the citations. Everyone can review them and make their own decisions. And then for physicians, go to the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, aapsonline.org. All the continuing medical education there on COVID-19, early treatment guide, roster of treating doctors. For patient advocacy and family advocacy on this issue of medical tyranny, I think you brought that up. Go to the Truth for Health or Foundation, truthforhealth.org. A lot of material there. For active treatment of COVID-19, Frontline Critical Care Network, flcc.net, American Frontline Doctors, AFLDS, and myfreedoctor.com are all early treatment organizations. And the last one on childhood vaccine, that particular issue alone, I would say Unity Project. But you'll see a lot of these. I'm going out across the nation. I've already done 24 or more public programs, grassroots freedom organizations, public programs for doctors, for lawmakers, and then the big public programs. They are very popular, well-attended. Thousands of people are coming out, cannot be censored. And in the end, America wants a straight story, and I believe freedom and informed choices will prevail.
Absolutely. I personally recommend, Dr. McCullough, all of the stuff I've read from you. You use a lot of big words, but you explain them in ways that we can understand, which I think is critically important. Dr. McCullough, thank you again for your time. I appreciate it, and I hope we have a chance to talk again.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, before I head out for my break, we've been talking about COVID, and I firmly believe one of the best things you can do is to make sure you support your immune system. I've got good news for you. At HealthyCell.com, Immune Super Boost is finally back in stock, and they have a special offer. You get the ultimate immune boosting package. Buy Immune Super Boost before April 7th, and they will give you a package of AC11. It helps repair damage to your DNA and flush your body of damaged cells. All you have to do is go to HealthyCell.com and use the code OUTLOUD. And guess what? They will still give you 20% off that first order. So again, head to HealthyCell.com, buy the Immune Super Boost package, get the Immune Super Boost, get the free AC11, get 20% off your order, and let HealthyCell.com know that you listen to America Out Loud, that you listen to the Constitution Study. Help them continue to support the work that we're doing here. Again, that's HealthyCell.com. Use Out Loud at checkout to get your bonus and your discount.
This is Dr. Peter McCullough. Do you know there's no other condition that I'm aware of where vitamins and supplements make such a big difference than COVID-19? We have an abundance of data that we need to be replete with a variety of micronutrients, and that includes vitamins, minerals, and other substances our bodies need. I rely on Healthy Cell Super Boost. That's Immune Super Boost. It's a gel pack that can be taken every day. I like to do it before I exercise and before I go out. It's a wonderful supplement. It gives me the immune super boost that I need. Go to healthycell.com, use the promotional code OUTLOUD, and get a discount on your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. It tastes great, comes in a convenient squeeze gel pack, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best. Freedom lies in being bold. Well, for 6 incredible years, bold is America Out Loud. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Welcome back, Everyday Americans. Thank you for joining the Constitution Study. I hope you appreciated the interview with Dr. McCullough as much as I did. You know, I know he uses a lot of big words and words we don't use in everyday language, but I think he explains it in a way that most people can understand. And the things that I pulled from it, the idea that, you know, the FDA is supposed to be a marketing oversight, you know, it's, you know, making sure that the information that they provide, that the companies provide, is accurate, that the safety data is accurate, that the CDC is supposed to be a data tracking entity, and that both of them are now sponsors of the COVID gene therapy. These entities that are supposed to be oversight are now advocating for a product. This is the definition of the fox guarding the hen house. The CDC and the FDA are supposed to be watchdog agencies, not sponsors. And it goes to show how corrupt things have gotten and really how conspiratorial they've become. You know, it'd be one thing to say, you know, I've been asking, with all the data coming out of the CDC, why have there not been more brakes put on? With all the nonsense coming out of the FDA, why are they still promoting so hard and so fast that everybody take this experimental drug? And, well, now I have a better idea. See, we tend to think that, so many people I know think that, oh, you know, if somebody's going to perform oversight, it should be the federal government. As is, getting a government paycheck makes someone magically omniscient and sinless and pure as a wind-driven soul. And it's just not true. Now, I know that means there's a lot of information we need to go through. And there are people that will weed through it, but we need to vet them as well. Because if we don't vet the data for ourselves, then we are subject to the whims, the agendas of others. For example, the New York Times had a recent headline saying the CDC isn't publishing large portions of the COVID data it collects. Now, to me, that should be a red flag. Wait a second. Your job is to collect and publish data. You should be providing this data. Now, I'm reading a report from The Federalist, and they mentioned that after 2 full years of this scandemic, the CDC, the Public Health Emergency Agency, has only published a tiny fraction of the data that it's collected, at least according to people familiar with the data. Well, for example, the first significant data dump from the CDC on the booster's effectiveness in people younger than 65 completely left out everyone age 18 to 49. Now, these are also the people that are least likely to benefit from the extra booster shots. Now, remember, I've said it before, there's lies, darn lies, and statistics. Well, here's a perfect example. You look at the numbers for 50 to 65, but you shroud it in the idea of you're looking at adults younger than 65, but you leave out a huge chunk. According to the New York Times, the agency has been reluctant to make figures public. They say because they might be misinterpreted as the vaccine being ineffective. Well, wait a second. Isn't that up to the public to determine, not the CDC? See, if the CDC were acting as a data collection and emergency information nexus, then it's not for them to decide if the vaccine is effective. They're supposed to collect the data and publish it, but they are apparently manipulating the data they're releasing because they're afraid it might be misinterpreted as being ineffective. Maybe it is ineffective. Maybe it's not. But that's not up to the CDC to decide. And notice, they only released this data once it was requested repeatedly, apparently, but it was also done after many Americans have lost their jobs, have suffered serious adverse health events, many have died, and only then, after they were forced to take the shot without all the data, without informed consent, only then does the CDC release the data and do so with a false narrative. Again, if they're filtering the data because they don't like the conclusions other people will take, they are pretending to give you the data when they're lying. That is malfeasance. And in fact, according to some, that may even rise to the level of clinical malpractice and scientific fraud. But Paul, it's the government, and the government is made up of people. And the people in government, not only do they have the same foibles as everyone else, because the government exercises power, it tends to attract people who are very interested in power. This fraudemic, this scamdemic, put whatever funny name you want, we have for 2 years been lied to by our government. These vaccines are not automatically safe. The safety data is being withheld because they're afraid you might think it's not effective. And if they've admitted to withholding this data, how much are they not admitting to? Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify. We need the verification. We need the data so that people like Dr. McCullough and others who are experts in this field know how, can look at it and advise us on it and get different points of view. Some people will say these numbers are good. Some will say there's bad. But let them fight it out in the public, in the realm of public discourse. Not allow the people who are supposed to be reporting the data to massage and withhold the data in an effort to manipulate the American people. And it's not simply the CDC that's doing this. Remember then when Pfizer... people were asking for the vaccine test safety data for their Comirnaty brand, the brand that was approved, was licensed by the FDA. Of course, they still said they needed some safety tests. And Pfizer didn't release it in the U.S., and they wanted, was it fit for 55 years, 75 years to get access to this data. And the court said, no, you got to start pumping out data. Well, they got the first 90 days worth of data on public use is available now. They started releasing these documents. And in the first 90 days of public use, Pfizer, there were the Pfizer reports 1,223 deaths. But you see, it didn't report this to the public. And it didn't pull the product off the market. Now, Peter McCullough, Dr. McCullough, did a nice article on this. You can find it on America Out Loud. Just look under shows. You'll find the stuff for Peter McCullough. And he describes how this is working. Why a single mRNA strand is causing all these problems. In looking at this, just think about that for a second. The 1,200 deaths have been correlated with this product, and it wasn't reported, and it wasn't pulled. That's unprecedented. It certainly does appear to be an extremely dangerous situation, because you're talking 90 days worth of public use. Now, I don't know what the total use was for this product, so I don't know what ratio that is. But still, you have a disease that for most people now is basically a common cold, where the death rate was under 2% throughout the demographics, and except for the older people or people with other comorbidities, it was under 1%. Now we have deaths from the supposed to be the vaccine, which isn't really a vaccine. Again, I look at this and this sounds to be like a conspiracy to deprive the American people of informed consent on an experimental product. And here we're talking about, again, Pfizer. And if remember, when we were talking with Dr. McCullough in the first half, it wasn't Pfizer that was talking about restricting the data. It was the FDA. The very company that's supposed to be making sure that the safety data is accurate was trying to hide the data from the American people. Doesn't bode well for trust in the American public health system, in those in government who are supposed to be overseeing, that apparently are now, I'm sorry, they're part of the problem. And those problems come with very serious, serious consequences. There are accusations that military doctors, in the military, they have been covering up, they've been tampering with their own data to hide the problems with the vaccine. Now, you may have been following, there is a case in Florida, in the federal courts in Florida, on behalf of Navy SEALs. And apparently, as part of that discovery, some of the data they've released shows that at a minimum, more people have died from the shot than from COVID. I want you to stop and think about that for a moment. You see, in the case, attorney for the SEALs, Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel, presented data showing 127 reported deaths from the vaccine in the VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Effects Reporting System, the CDC's own data, own system for recording adverse effects. In the military, 127 VAERS deaths. Compare that with the 93 reported COVID deaths in the military since the beginning of the vaccine. 127 VAERS deaths just in 2021 compared to 93 COVID deaths since the beginning of the pandemic. And keep in mind, COVID deaths have been overestimated. We've already talked about the fact that the CDC keeps playing games with the numbers. Oh, yeah, you know, they dropped deaths for minors, something like 40%. They've admitted that at least 75% of those deaths that they report as COVID deaths are people who died with four or more comorbidities, meaning they died with COVID, not necessarily of COVID. That's deaths. What about the rates of myocarditis or pericarditis or other adverse effects? This data is being hidden. And you are being lied to. And if you have taken the shot based on that data, you are not given informed consent, which means our public health system is in direct violation of the Nuremberg Code, the medical ethics involving human medical experimentation. That is a pretty scary, I don't know about you, that to me is a pretty scary thought. Now think about this. According to the U.S. Naval Institute, more than 1,000 Marines and over 469 Navy personnel have been separated because they refused to be medical guinea pigs. Maybe they were smart. See, if there have been almost 1,500 Navy personnel that have been separated because they wouldn't take the shot, they stand a much better chance of surviving, right? Because they're talking 127 died in a year correlated with the vaccine. All right, maybe it's not directly related. Maybe there is a relation. But those numbers kind of show that these Marines and seamen they're probably smart. They probably made the right move. Now, by the way, if you or you know someone who was separated from the military for failure to be in a medical guinea pig, I would like to talk to them. I'd like to talk to you, or if you know somebody, I'd like to talk to them. Just put them in touch with me through the website, constitutionstudy.com. I kind of want that point of view of someone who had to choose between being a medical experiment and following their career. In many places, following their calling. So again, if you are one, contact me through the website. But these numbers are pointing to a conclusion that I hope you're going to get with me in the very near future. Because we've already talked about the corrupt method of the CDC and the FDA being sponsors of a product they're supposed to oversee. We've seen the dangers that have come from it. We've seen the impact on people's lives. And now, just as we are seeing more reports of, yes, we need to drive this shot into five-year-olds. Now they're even talking about doing it to six-month-olds. Guess what? The data coming out shows that the two-dose Pfizer COVID vaccine provides minimal protection of infection for children 5 to 15 years old. We are experimenting on our children for little actual effect. And I want to be specific. This specifically deals with the Omicron variant, which is the predominant variant we have now. But this is, again, CDC data, which already is suspect, right? But they're showing the stuff, if we can't trust the CDC to accurately report deaths, if they have if they're placing their thumbs on the scales because they are sponsors of this product and they're still publishing data that says, listen, 5 to 15 year olds, current variant, little difference. But they're still promoting it. And your tax dollars are being used to promote this product. Even though their own data says that the Pfizer, quote-unquote, vaccine, after the second dose, was 31% effective against Omicron infections in ages 5 to 11, 59% amongst adolescents 12 to 15. Are you prepared to have your children be medical experiments, to become genetically modified people for those numbers? And as a parent, were you notified? Were you told, hey, guess what? The CDC says if your child's under 12, maybe one-third effective, 31%. take this experimental vaccine, this experimental gene therapy that we don't know the long-term effects, and more, the long-term effects are appearing to be horrific. But we're going to give it to our kids. And we're going to give it to our kids to protect the adults. You know, think about it. When the Titanic went down, what was the cry? Women and children first. We used to be a society that protected the most vulnerable among us. And now we have a government and we have people in society that are willing to throw our children under the bus for a scary boogeyman that they have little chance of dying from. Yes, I'm a father. I would go through pain to prevent my daughter from going through pain. But we have become a society that says, oh no, we need to vaccinate our children, even though they are not the ones getting sick, they are not the ones dying, but we do it because somehow that is supposed to protect us. That is a thoroughly vile idea. To me, it is thoroughly vile for adults to have their children be experimented on out of fear for themselves is the sign of a failed society. And I don't use that term lightly. It is why, like I said, we should be protecting the most vulnerable among us. We should be, as parents. Now, granted, my daughter's an adult now. But we should be protecting our children. We're supposed to be standing up and protecting them. How many of you are simply following like serfs what your government actors are telling you to experiment on your children to keep the adults safe? What does that say about us? Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but the answer is it says nothing good about the American society that we are doing this to our children. So what do all of these do? From the interview with Dr. McCullough to the questions about the CDC and the FDA and the military and all this, what are we learning? We are learning, we should be learning two things. Yes, there is a conspiracy to hide from the American people both the dangers of COVID and the dangers of this gene therapy. I'm sorry, it is not a vaccine. It doesn't meet the legal definition of a vaccine. The CDC tried to redefine the word so they could apply it to a vaccine. This is an experimental gene therapy that is being used with the hope that it will minimize your symptoms. The American people are being denied informed consent in direct violation of medical ethics. Our government public health quote-unquote watchdogs are the ones promoting these products in direct contradiction to the charters that created them. Tell me that's not a conspiracy. Tell me, now, I when it comes to ignorance or conspiracy, I tend to look to expect ignorance. This goes beyond ignorance because we see it at so many levels. It is a conspiracy within the government. It's a conspiracy within the media. It's a conspiracy within the social media. And it's a conspiracy within many in the American population. They may be doing it out of ignorance, but it's still they're still conspiring to prevent you getting information to make an informed consent. And the American people are going to pay the price for it. Whether you're listening to Dr. McCullough, the reports I'm reading, when are the American people going to wake up and realize the government does not have your best interests at heart? I don't care what they say. I don't care how wonderful Dr. Fauci says, or Walensky, or Biden, or Harris, or any of them. They do not have your best interests at heart because they're more interested in their own power, their own aggrandizement, their own enrichment. And we have fallen for it. We have fallen for it hook, line, and sinker. Though people have been warning about this since the beginning, The American people have fallen hook, line, and sinker for this. And I know I'll be called, well, Paul, you're just a conspiracy theorist. You said the word conspiracy. I'm sorry. It's not a theory when the evidence points to just that. And I don't know how to look at the American people in the eye and have them look for themselves, to wash the mud out of their eyes and look and say, wait a second, if the FDA is suppressing data, if the CDC is suppressing data, if they have gone from a watchdog group to a activist group, why are they in charge? I'm stuck. I find it both infuriating and disheartening. Infuriating that's happening, disheartening that so few people seem to care. But you don't have to be ignorant. And the thing about a conspiracy is once you know about it, you can protect yourself. You can protect yourself by looking and going, no. No, the answer is no. See, when Ronald Reagan was asked about controlling spending, he says you control spending the same way you protect your virtue, by learning to say no. I want to take that to the next level. You want to preserve your liberty? You learn to say no. No, government, I'm not going to become part of your medical experiment. No, I'm not going to trust your data when you obviously are manipulating it. No, I don't take your recommendations when you have a blatant conflict of interest. No. If this were the SEC, there would be criminal charges. Why are there no criminal charges here? Because too many of the American people have been bamboozled. The question is, will we wake up from our slumber before our children and our children's children have been sold into slavery, servitude, and serfdom? Will we pull out of this dystopian scenario we have allowed to come upon ourselves? Or will we simply sit back and watch our children's future be sold for a bowl of pottage because we are unwilling to stand up for ourselves, because you're unwilling to be the masters of our government rather than its slaves? You can find out more about my show, get all the latest podcasts, just go to AmericaOutloud.com. If you look under our shows or schedule, you'll find the Constitution Study. You'll be in the know, and you'll be able to share the blessings of liberty with friends, family, and the following generation.
Stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.